Disco.
D-I-S-C-O. D-I-S-C-O. It's D.
Divisive.
I. Interesting. S.
Star Trek.
C. Contentious. It's O.
I think I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Oh, yes.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Ten Backwards, where we are genetically predetermined to sense the coming of a discovery-based podcast. And I sense it coming now.
Yeah, nice.
Joining me for this is my colleague Will Turland.
All right.
And my other colleague, Rick Palmer.
There's sand in my shoes.
And our third uninvited guest colleague, Gemma Turland.
Hello.
So, there was a pretty big deal. Premiere of a new Star Trek based series this week.
Yeah, with the Trek Book Club
podcast that I do with Trekkie Rob. Yeah, that was out. We've had some good responses.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. It's gone down pretty well. Yeah. I think there was some other programme on. But,
Antiques Road Trip came back this week.
Oh, right.
One of the experts, he bought a camera, an old camera, for £60.
Mm-hmm.
Guess how much he sold it for?
£62.
Up.
60.
Oh, it's going to be a long podcast.
£20,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a good markup.
Yeah. So, everybody, if you go around old antique shops, look for old cameras.
Absolutely.
anyway,
feeling like we're rapidly losing control already, we actually also had the arrival, finally, of Star Trek Discovery.
Yay.
Hooray. It was a long road getting from there to here.
No, don't do it.
Sorry, no.
Don't you dare.
It was a long time, though. It was announced almost 2 years ago, and some big delays. They really teased this out for us, but it hit. And Monday night, we got to see it here in the UK. Sunday, if in America. Yeah, stop showing off, Americans. We know.
It's just how the globe is, time-wise.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, actually, in relatively speaking, their Sunday night is only a few hours before our Monday morning when it launched.
Yeah.
But we have to go to work on a Monday morning, so it's not going to watch it then.
But what a great way what a great thing to think about at work.
Oh, yes, it's made Mondays a little bit more.
And get through this shitty day at work and watch Star Trek Discovery.
So how did we all feel about Star Trek Discovery? We've all watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it, so spoilers if you haven't watched it.
Yes.
Probably not the best podcast to be listening to. Go off and watch it.
Yeah, but I really, really liked it.
I liked
it hard. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had some nitpicks, but overall, I was really impressed with it.
Hmm.
How about you guys?
So I sat down to watch it, and we had the little pre-credits bit where we saw the Klingons, and then we had the little bits on the desert planet, and then there was a lot of references there. We had Kalis mentioned. We obviously had a very Starfleet conversation regarding General Order 1, Starfleet specializations. We saw a ship come through, beamed up, and all these things sort of, I think, very quickly firmly put me in Star Trek again. And so when that theme started, and the first four bars, those very familiar bars, I think any hardcore fan knows, gets a chill when they hear that. To be quite honest, I just lost it. I just cried. I literally had to watch the opening thing with tears in my eyes because I was so overjoyed that after 12 years, Star Trek was back. And, you know, I'm not ashamed. I have emotions. I'm not a Vulcan or an android. So yeah, it was a pretty intense and very special experience. Be able to to see a new Star Trek after all this time.
It sounds like it.
It was. It was. Yeah.
As our experience of it was, well, mine and Gemma's was a little offset because our daughter Emily came down
and chatted
a lot of the way through. Yeah. And because we really, really wanted to watch it, so we kind of made the decision
to lock her in a cupboard.
No, we thought, oh, let's not put her back to bed. Let's let her watch it with us because then we can just watch it. And she was
like, you feel like you're doing good parenting at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we forced her to watch an episode of Star Trek because the alternative was going to bed. And so for once, she was pretty on board with watching Star Trek.
Star Trek trumps bed.
Definitely. She seemed to kind of like it.
Yeah, she did.
Then why haven't we gone and got her down here to give her opinions in this podcast?
You are not going to wake her up, Rick. That is the last thing we want to do. But yeah, so it was kind of like, I think the first half was a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And then the second
distracted,
half was... Yeah. But I've watched it a second time since then. And
same here.
Enjoyed it hard. So what...
Well, a lot of the first half we kind of knew from the trailers anyway. So a lot of it wasn't a huge surprise.
Yeah. I guess so.
I'm going to admit, I think of all of us, I'm probably the one that liked it the least. But that said, I did like it.
I didn't dislike it. I liked it a lot, but
I'm going to say that I was whelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed. I wasn't overwhelmed. I liked it. I thought it was a solid introduction to a new Star Trek show. But what I would say is that I don't think it should be considered a pilot, because in these two episodes we haven't met a lot of the characters or even the ship that will probably go on to characterise the show itself.
Well, the show is called named after the ship and we still haven't seen it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of like...
It's more of an introduction to the world of...
Yeah, I mean,
I... Well, it's the more, kind of, it's like it's the start like a, of the story.
A prologue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A term. One of the creators used. It's more of a prologue and a third episode.
In general, I liked it. I thought it was a good couple of episodes. What I would say is that not a lot about it struck me as being classically Star Trek. It felt more to me like a new show set in space. Visually, it looked great, but it visually felt more like the Kelvinverse. But that said, that didn't bother me. It's just things that I noticed as I was watching. Mm. But I mean, I liked all the stuff after the kind of opening scenes when we first see the Shenzhou. I liked that. Watching it a second time around, I kind of got more of the background conversations and the little kind of Easter eggs that you see, and I thought it was good. I thought Michelle Yeoh was really good as Captain Georgiou. I liked her a lot.
Fully in agreement with you.
I have to admit, I really liked T'Kuvma. I thought he was a charismatic leader. And another thing is with it. Even from the trailer, you get the sense that the Klingons are different, but you don't really hear them speak very much. In these two episodes, you hear them speak a lot, and they're very different. I got the feeling. I mean, this feels essentially like a visual reboot of the Klingons. I'm not sure if they're ever really going to square the circle of fitting it into what we've had established so far, but that doesn't really bother me because they feel more alien and formidable. I don't mind it. I think it's just something that they've decided to go with. They decided, we've got this new show, we're going to bring back the Klingons, and we're going to give them a bit more... We're going to change them visually. We're going to do something with them.
My feeling is, if you stuck beards and long curly wigs on those Klingons, you wouldn't really distinguish them massively from the Klingons we're familiar with.
There's a bit more in the front of the face.
It's a bit thicker. It's a bit heavier.
Yeah.
Yes, but the biggest thing is that looks more striking because they don't seem to have much hair. I don't know why that is, whether that's a fashion, a trend, you know. strange. Because actually, why did all Klingons have moustaches and beards and hair as they did before?
It was the hair rock revolution of the... yeah, but they are very different.
They are different.
They are.
Their dress style.
Just physically different. I think they are different in character.
Their language sounds more alien. I like that. They're a compelling watch.
I thought it was a brilliant move to have them consistently talking Klingon the entire time.
My one issue with that is that they and their ships were visually very compelling. They're very interesting. There's a lot going on there. But if you're spending your entire time reading the subtitles, I don't know whether it's because I probably read a bit slower, but you can't actually take it all in. You can either see what they're saying or look at this feast for the eyes that is the Klingon ship.
And the Klingons
and their outfits, which I have an issue more with their outfits.
You've said stuff about their pretty armour before.
I'm kind of glad at least we've tried something different to that bloody grey armour they had. Apparently
shoulder
forever.
Pads.
Yeah, Christ, yeah.
Going back to the subtitles, I have a friend who is partially hearing, and I go around to her and her husband's house when we watch Daredevil, so she has the subtitles on for that. It really helps, because sometimes there's a bit of mumbling going. And I'm not saying you were speaking ill of subtitles, but and Will's also. I watched some episodes of Twin Peaks that have subtitles with them, and then it's helped. But with something very visual,
the contrast between it's very visual, and I have no issue with subtitles at all. But I just found it.
I missed a lot. I have to admit, second time around, I noticed way more.
I just feel that it's good to have them talking their own language. Especially when they're stood there going on about Klingon supremacy and remaining Klingon. It's a bit then ridiculous to have them talk in English. So I liked that as a new touch.
It is always a bit silly where, because it often in, say, Next Gen or DS9, we'd have maybe the first few lines of a conversation
and then they switch
to English.
Sometimes they switch back and forth in a single conversation.
And sometimes they'd have a reason why they'd speak in English, and it'd be like some sort of convoluted reason because they were on like an English speaking state, like an Earth station.
I think you'd have like two Klingons on the bridge of a Klingon ship. They talk Klingon, then they have a communication with a human. So they talk English there.
Right.
They end the communication and keep talking English.
Yeah.
It's like...
It does make more sense that they would just talk Klingon.
Their character, their general Klingonness, I felt looking over it as kind of quite consistent. You have the references to Kalis as a revered figure. Mm. You have the infighting... they've basically been isolated because there's been so much infighting for 100 years. This is not a new thing in Klingon society. Mm-hmm. You have the 24 ships turn up, and then you have these members of the High Council sneering down at T'Kuvma, sneering down at what they consider the mistake of nature, convinced of their own superiority. These are arrogant, power-hungry Klingons as much as I've ever seen them, I think. Mm. Visually they look more daunting, more intimidating. And I do like that T'Kuvma's group is, in many ways, a very good analogy for supremacist groups that we may be seeing in society now. And that's something Star Trek should not shy away from.
No.
Having some sort of allegory or storyline dealing with.
Yeah.
It fits very well with the ethos, the original ethos.
Absolutely, But to me, I didn't feel that they were very much outside the Klingon character.
I think for me it was the kind of the... I don't know it in depth as you do, but obviously they have their religion, but it's never been so overwhelming in their society.
Mm.
But with this, it seemed that it was. To me, the way they speak, the way they present themselves, actually reminded me more of elites in Halo universe than the Klingons that I know. There's something more mannered about them.
The sarcophagus more. Ship was...
Oh, that was awesome.
It was beautiful, but it's not... It's interior-wise, it's pretty... It's like some kind of gothic palace. Not what I'm familiar with of a Klingon ship, which is kind of like a bit
kind
grimy.
More workmanlike. Yeah.
But I think T'Kuvma's very much style and imagery, and that's how he creates his following. He's got the charisma, but he's also got to project a certain image and a certain style. I think that's what works for him. So when he rebuilds that ship as he talks, he's going to make a certain look.
And that is an unusual ship. I mean, that is it's thousands of years old, and like it's not a sort of bug standard Klingon.
The Shenzhou is repairing a relay station.
Yes, which immediately that's like a very Star Trek type mission. This is starting.
Yes.
Oh, one of our interstellar relays has gone offline.
There's an episode in Next Gen where they're repairing the Midas Array. Argus Array, sorry.
Yeah. I think Midas Array is the one used in the Pathfinder project on Voyager.
Yes, so
Index
you're right.
Like Argus, but all right, another catalogue shop.
And a city in ancient Greece.
That's quite obscure.
I know. I still really like Index.
I'm moving slightly back from that. I really liked the opening log entry that Burnham makes, because it's overly and unnecessarily poetic about the beauties of space, and I quite like that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the bit where she explains what the star date is in normal dates.
Completely unnecessary, but I like, at least it puts you in
context.
No,
I like that.
I quite like that.
I like the way she mentions it's a Sunday.
But I like we also immediately set exactly what year it is as well, so we have a frame of reference against other stuff if you're inclined to look at timelines.
About 100 years after the end of Enterprise.
What did you think of the bit where they walk around in a Starfleet symbol in the sand?
Silly, but forgivable.
I mean, there was a massive sandstorm incoming.
Why not just draw a big old cock and balls?
Oh, Rick.
Because how would they know it was them? It could have been anybody.
That would be the first thought of any reasonable person.
I think Saru wouldn't have beamed him up if they'd done that. I think Saru's quite sensible and by the book.
On my world, that's the number four.
I really liked the Saru character, actually. His little relationship with Burnham.
Yeah.
When they're shoving each other around the console and stuff was fantastic. Yeah. And the little snipes at each other.
I thought he was probably my favourite character.
He was really
good.
Really,
me too. Cool.
I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
Really interesting as well. The evolution of his species comes from a...
Yeah, that was a nice... It was... He's a... he's the prey. They have like a...
I got the impression that it wasn't... I don't think the things that farm them were different. I think it was still that species.
Yeah. Well, he says in our... He says...
Your world has food chains. Mine does not. Our species map is binary. We are either predator or prey.
Yeah, I kind of imagine that the hunter species were a...
Different.
Maybe the Herosian.
Mm-hmm. That's a long way away.
Yeah, I know, but hey, maybe...
But if there's not a food chain, then how can there be lots of species?
They said there was two.
Binary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good point. Maybe some like rebellion, some prey rebellion.
But then again, what would the hunted species eat? There's got to be a food chain.
That's a good point. Grass.
Plants.
No one considers the rights of the grass. The grass takes over.
But anyway, he was cool, right? And
the interplay between the captain as well with those two, when they actually agree on something, and she says, "Oh, note it in the ship's log," and Burnham's like, "Is the sarcasm really necessary?" And she goes, "No, but it's fun." Mm-hmm. It's just like immediately you get this really nice dynamic sense of how that bridge must be. It'd be
very,
quite a
very different
place.
From cold old Picard in Encounter at Farpoint.
Oh, yeah, there's
shouted at everyone.
I paid more attention the second time around. I noticed there's a character called Connor, and
yeah,
then there's
the
also there's Baby Daft Punk, as I think
oh,
the character
yeah.
thinks.
Oh, yes. I am fascinated.
I love Baby Daft Punk.
I want to know what the deal is.
Her deal is she plays rock and jazz.
Because at one point they took her off to Med Bay, so she is.
Yeah, I think yeah. she's a. She's
I
not
think
just a, an
she's
android.
She's organic, isn't she?
She's either a cyborg or an alien that wears
a
because because
yeah.
there was speculation that she might be Ina. You know, the kind of sub-species of the Andorians.
Oh!
From the telepresence.
Is that because of the helmet?
Because of the
telepresence helmet.
Because of the telepresence.
Oh,
yeah. And I think there's a... I think you overhear it being called, like, second tactical or something, so it might make sense. But I do think that... I don't think her skin is...
It was pale.
I think if that turned out just to be a helmet and she was fully organic under it, people are going to be really disappointed.
Yeah.
People are really hooked onto this cyborg or early prototype android thing.
Mm.
I don't know, but yeah, she's interesting. But to me, she is just sort of background.
Mm.
If she comes out to the forefront, I hope it'll be pretty interesting.
I just have a feeling they were like, who can we have that? What would be cool on the bridge? Crazy sort of android helmet. Those Daft Punk guys are selling those on eBay. I'll pick them up. I'll put it on a child. Done.
It's weird that you can see, like, on the front of her helmet, you can see readouts and stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
Cause
yeah. Why would it be on the front?
Because if it was backwards, that might make sense. Because it's just like
maybe that's how she communicates.
Yes, true.
Maybe she can put like emojis on the on the screen if she's
oh,
sad.
Oh god,
that would
be like that Doctor Who episode.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's probably where
emoji robots are not. No, we don't want to go that.
Or
that's where
moon,
I've got that
moon,
from. Probably
the robot in Moon can do
oh,
that.
Oh
yes,
the
yeah.
robot in Moon is awesome.
Yes,
yeah. But I thought she was organic because they. Sure, they say to take her to sick
they
bay. They don't
they
say
do.
Kick her to the side of the room. We'll sweep her up with a dustpan and brush later on.
Maybe in sick bay they also can do.
Maybe they've got a big old bin in sick bay. Just dump her in there.
Turn her off and on again.
Yeah.
No, I thought I liked her. I that would be a character I wouldn't mind seeing again. It was
Yeah, I mean the reaction in the fandom is huge. Everyone wants to see her and find out her deal.
Yeah,
that's good. I really like these sounds on the bridge. There's loads of familiar sounds.
Mm.
Yep.
Even though the bridge is very different looking to what we're used to, there's all the expected sounds, and there's a mix of like console sounds that go from like through next gen era as well. But it all sort of anchors you into that universe quite well.
And you get background kind of almost like radio chatter as well. I think I like that in the episode you'd have. When they're trying to hail the Klingon ship a bit later on, it's like a radio. It's like a radio conversation, and again, it really reminded me of the opening of the 2009 Star Trek film.
Yeah,
it really reminded me of that.
Yeah,
that kind of, especially when they encounter the Klingons, that kind of build up to that.
Definitely, I think there's a lot that's reminiscent of the Kelvinverse movies in general, and Discovery. Like the whole look of it feels like it's very much based on that.
Yeah, the kind of big view screen look.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
But we are looking at a point in modern filmmaking technology where that is the way we're going to go with it.
And it's also probably the thing that a lot of people that are watching this show are most familiar with. They're the films they're probably most familiar with. So it's
and you don't want to. I mean. I know a lot of people saying it needs to look like how it did in the 60s, but who's going to watch a show that's deliberately designed to look like a 60s low-budget show?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think a TV show needs to commit to looking as good as it possibly can for the budget that it's got. And I think that's what they've done.
It's, in a weird way, it's more difficult to represent the future. Like, in the 60s, it's easy to represent the future because you can have these ideas and you just put them out and the viewing audience is more buying it. We are in the future. We have smartphones, we have Wi-Fi, we have all sorts of things. It's I would say that the bridge of the Shenzhou is not familiar, but it's not maybe as kind of different as somebody in the 60s was when they looked at the bridge of the Enterprise. That's not a bad thing. It's just how things are.
I also think, in my head canon, how I think about it is what we predicted the future would look like in the 60s is already massively different because of how technology's moved on now. So now we're looking...
Yeah, but in some ways it's behind. We're not living on the moon.
Well, no. But we don't know how it's going to look. And it's not just about the technology available, it's also about the trends in fashion and the way things look. You know, we've moved from the TVs, we moved from all sorts of CRT tubes to flat screens and different colours of casings going in between. So my feeling is that while the Shenzhou Bridge is big and there's a lot of stations and a lot of consoles and a lot of displays, that is an old ship compared to the original Enterprise.
And they mention that, don't they? When we first meet Burnham. Mm.
But when
and Georgiou talks to Burnham about that ship.
Yes, she says
she mentions it's that about it's an old ship.
Yeah, and particularly referencing the transporters.
So I think you don't have that level of displays and touchscreens and amount of consoles on the Enterprise, because the Enterprise is a state-of-the-art, top-of-the-line starship.
Yeah.
She's got the tech and the automation. I was talking to Niall, actually, in the pub last night about this, and because he used to be in the Navy, and he was sort of telling me how the console sizes for weaponry would gradually shrink down and the amount of buttons would become much less over the course of the years. I was like, okay, although you can make this argument that, oh, look, it's got touchscreens and the Enterprise have buttons, yes, but the Enterprise has got tiny control panels because so much can be automated and so much can be done more efficiently, as opposed to you have to have four or five display screens to show what one thing will do on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
If you see what... And yes, the look's different, but fashions change, things move.
I like the uniforms, they're great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're all right.
And when people say it ought to be the gold command uniforms, well, Next Gen and DS9 had different uniforms at the same time frame. In Generations, we see them mixed on the same ship, so it's not out of the ordinary.
And I like that the Doctor had a white uniform. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. I think the uniforms are a good progression from Enterprise as well. Well, still, if you factor in the Kelvin from the 09 film, that can be consistent in the design lineage, I think, for those too.
There's a couple of things about them, a couple of design choices that I hadn't quite made my peace with, but I think I have made my peace with now. One is the massive transporter room. It's really massive.
It is.
And it didn't make sense to me. So on Enterprise, which is set about 100 years before Discovery, right, the transporter room is, as we've seen it in other shows, in the original series, it's normal. So even in the Kelvinverse movies, it's the sort of size we're expecting. But in Discovery, it's massive.
Mm.
And why? But then there is a line where they talk about how that style of transporter is being phased out.
Yeah,
it looked vaguely similar to the kind of transporter they had in Enterprise. That kind of poly. What's it called? I don't know, like geometric shape. The little, because then the transport enterprise is like this little kind of, almost like a big 24-sided dice kind of shape. You imagine looking at the back of it.
Yeah.
Okay. There was some visual cues, I think. I know what you mean, but it was really big.
Well, in my head canon, I kind of thought, well, maybe this is a ship that is designed to be massive things somewhere. Like, what if there was a reason why
those smart slugs from
either Beholder or the Beholder series,
or maybe like some prefab space station units that there was a particular reason why that designer ship does have a big transporter room to facilitate the size of things it can
might be just people.
In the continuation of Enterprise in novel form, they actually establish that Archer is suffering from a degenerative disease on a cellular level because of his transporter use. And there's an inherent flaw in the transporter design of that era. So you kind of then, if you were to accept that as a canon thing, which you can or not, depending on your view of the books, you could say that then they shifted to an entirely different design of transporter, which was then superseded later, and that's what the Shenzhou has.
Right.
And but as they say, technology ebbs, flows, moves on, changes, goes through phases and trends.
The technology thing that I was a bit more unsure about was the kind of holographic, replacing the view screen. So when somebody from another ship contacts you or somewhere else, they appear as a hologram rather than on the view screen. Okay. Because that's not something we really see until like Deep Space Nine.
DS9 do one episode where they try it. But you've got to consider the completely different look. The hologram that they had of Eddington, because it was for the uniform where they used that, was completely solid, stood there, no glitching, no fritzing, no interruptions.
And a Nemesis as well.
He sends although in that case Shinzon's projected one through with no holographic equipment in the Enterprise end.
That's a good point.
On Discovery those holograms skip, they fritz, they cut out and jump forward. They're not solid, they're not even, you know, opaque, they're sort of partially see through and stuff. And so I kind of figure, again, it's one of those imperfect technologies that they may be abandoned in favour of view screens, because holographic signal might well be really awkward to send, might require more power, more transmission bandwidth, might be difficult to encrypt, easy to intercept. So there's probably flaws of that. They abandoned it, and then there was a resurgence, Deep Space Nine, where they decided, oh, let's give holographic signals a try. Maybe that communication thing's due a revisit as we perfected holograms on the holodeck and stuff. So my feeling is it's probably like that. I also feel like the window view...
That's some in-depth headcanon that you've worked there.
The window view screen thing, I think that's probably a thing that was phased out because, essentially, that's going to be structurally a weakened spot.
Mm.
And so maybe they decided, after some issues, they'd armour the bridge and have an internal view screen. And so...
Because that does seem to be how ships are in later Trek series.
I don't find any of these things to be that unexplainable.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice to have holograph, but I can kind of understand the fact that having two people face to face in a room makes better dramatically than the dramatic death of talking on a view screen.
Yeah, see that's it. It felt like it was a decision that was made to service the drama of the plot rather than something that was in keeping with the universe. And also
I didn't mind it. Like it wasn't the point where I've lost it. I've lost interest now. This is too much. But it's you kind of have to. If you do, they do walk around a bit. What if one of the characters walks down a bit, and wouldn't his hologram go? How does it work?
Yeah,
because there's a bit. I don't know. I didn't mind it, but I thought it was something I noticed.
You
as
have
being,
to concede that you can project reasonable holographic facsimiles nowadays.
Yeah, Tupac, Michael Jackson.
Exactly. It's not like we can't actually say.
Okay, I'm not saying it's unfeasible. I'm just saying it's not something we've seen before in Star Trek, and a view screen would probably be fine.
I've seen a lot of complaints canon wise on it, so but I feel it's. I don't have a lot of problem justifying it.
Yeah. So. I should just say at this point, Gemma is really quiet because she's left the room.
In disgust.
Sick of our shit. I think our son was crying.
Yeah. What did you think about the whole kind of work going to look at the anomaly thing that they find?
Well, I mean, it's always cool to see a spacesuit thruster pack walk, and that was quite fun. So, I liked that bit. And then suddenly having the guy jump up from behind her with a batleth, it's like...
Yeah, I like the bit where her suit scans the enemy and there's that little
identifies its
cleaner symbol.
Yeah. It was one of the most visually impressive parts of that.
Yeah,
certainly all in that first episode.
I also liked they had a lot of interactivity on the bridge, turning the ship the right way and everything. It was all very, sort of complex joint effort.
Yeah,
sort of thing. That sort of because it would be a very complex manoeuvre to literally throw someone out of the ship at this bit. So it was kind of quite well done. I liked that.
And then Burnham ends up killing that guard.
Yeah,
torchbearer
by accident.
And I have to admit that I did have a little bit. There's a scene later on where the Klingons are kind of putting the Klingon that's died in a sarcophagus and sending him out to be part of the kind of hull of the. The Black Fleet. There's a scene where they decide to choose his replacement, and Tukubma goes like, he doesn't say that, he goes like, cha, bra, bra, cha, and he chooses, and
the guy goes,
no, I'm fine, thanks.
I don't want to
be.
Then we get Vox stepping up.
I chuckled a little bit at that scene where he goes, "No, I'm fine. I'll just be one of the crowd, like going, yeah, this is pretty cool. Yeah, but this guy should be. This guy would love to be a torchbearer.
He loves lighting things.
Yeah,
get this guy on it. He'd be great.
He put his hand. Yeah, he loves. He put his hand in some fire. He loves
how great he is.
He's literally a torchbearer. Yeah. His hand. Yeah, yeah, I I thought I got a bit confused with the kind of what the Klingons were up to. So they had this beacon, and then they also have their sarcophagus ship.
Yeah.
And I kind of lost track a bit at certain times about what was going on with the Klingons, what they were up to. And I got a general idea, but
they seem to fire off the beacon. To kind of bring in, I guess that was a message to the other
hand. So they sabotaged the relay station to bring in a ship to find the beacon.
They
sabotaged the relay to bring Starfleet in. And then they lit the beacon to bring Klingon ships in. Because Guvman's entire thing was he wanted to start a war.
But the beacon is the thing that the Starfleet ship senses and can't work out what it is. And that's done for them to go and have a look at it.
Yes.
And then they. And that alerts them to someone.
Because that's what the torchbearer was doing on there.
Yeah.
He was there to actually light it. So
one nitpick I had with that was that... Because it's really bright and it floods the bridge. And they mention that they're trying to filter it out, but they can't because it's so bright.
It's a load of... Yeah, it's a...
But then Burnham goes off to put in a phone call to Sarek that he answers immediately.
Yeah, which Sarek got nothing better to do than sit by the phone all
that
day.
That was the one bit that made me chuckle with it being a little bit silly. Because I was like, come on. Why did he answer that the second it rang?
Open dedicated subspace channel 222 AA7.
Use of this frequency requires diplomatic
voice print authorized. Burnham. Michael.
Confirmed.
Commander Burnham.
Hello, Sarek.
And then he mentions, because he says something like to her, oh.
The Quadrant reports a new star in the sky. What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Thinking, wait a minute, how has he seen that? That beacon went off, 10 minutes ago? In the story, he's on Vulcan. How has he seen that?
Yeah, because the very physics of light speed travel make that impossible. I mean, I considered that.
It takes light 8.5 minutes to reach us on Earth from our sun.
Yeah.
Surely, maybe an hour has gone by. Maybe it took ages for it to get that call through.
I do think they talk about it sending some kind of subspace message. So maybe it's...
Okay.
I also wonder if there's a certain level of sensor ability that where sensors move up beyond warp speeds.
Yeah.
And I think that something doing that has a kind of a visual presence. It's like a weapon of terror almost. It's a visual way of frightening an enemy. And then it does the kind of subspace thing to.
Well, in my headcanon was that. Maybe there's a much closer listening post or space station that's picked that up a hell of a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And then they've texted, they've texted Sarek and say, oh, yeah, by the way...
There's a bright new light has suddenly appeared. And Sarek's like, I'm just sat by the phone in case Burnham calls.
He's like, oh, I'm going to sit by the phone.
Okay, I've been here 4 weeks, Burnham's but I'm there. Sure she's going to call soon.
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
What did we think about Burnham's mutiny?
Oh, I know Rick's got some thoughts on this.
I thought it was inexcusable. I don't have a problem with mutiny happening in a... I don't have a problem with depicting mutiny. I think to put it in the first episode of a new show is... Well, it's a bold move, but... It just, I can't see. It's inexcusable. There's no real explanation for why Burnham does it. I don't think. I don't think we've had enough of time with the Burnham character to go, oh, okay.
Mm.
I understand why she's done that. The thing that shocked me most was the was the assault on her captain. That shocked me more than the mutiny. Mm. I think I genuinely didn't like that. I thought it genuinely made me turn against the Burnham character.
Yeah.
More so than the mutiny itself, I think. Just assaulting your captain is
pretty bad.
It's pretty unconscionable.
Yeah. Well, you go, sir.
I think she genuinely believed she was doing it for the right reasons, to protect the ship and the crew. I do think that her belief in the right reasons is very much coloured by her feelings about Klingons.
But, this is the thing. I watched this episode, and the Burnham character never mentioned her having issues with Klingons. It's two other characters that mention that. It's Sarek and Georgiou. Mm. And the turning point for her doing what she does is actually talking to Sarek. He talks to her and says, I hope you... He kind of talks to her about using this information in the correct way. So...
Well, she kind of pumps him for that information, though, doesn't she?
Why, like, is she calling wants... about how the Vulcans deal with Klingons? It's because it's Klingons. She doesn't even trust the captain's way here.
Exactly.
To
go and to talk to Sarek and then to go against your captain, I don't get it. This isn't a character that's not been on the ship for a while. Burnham has been on the ship for 7 years. She's the first officer. I can't imagine that there hasn't been a scenario in those 7 years where Burnham hasn't done something like this before.
She's not, but no one's seen a Klingon in about 100 years, have they?
I don't think these episodes establish that Burnham has a problem with the Klingons. I disagree. I think they establish that her parents were killed by Klingons.
Yeah,
that's it.
But that would.
But they don't understand.
That would definitely make you have a problem with the.
She's been on Vulcan. She's been trained through the Vulcan Academy.
But we saw her kind of freaking out when in that training bubble. Getting upset, crying, but not getting angry, an emotional impact.
Yeah, and so what's happened on Vulcan is they trained her how to repress that. But she's human. That's not a good idea. That's
speculation. That's not something you can get from
the
episode.
I don't think
the
show has to spell it out. I think.
I appreciate this is your interpretation of the episode, but there's nothing in that episode that clearly marks out that Burnham has a problem with the Klingons. All you know is that they killed her parents.
There is, though. A, they killed her parents. Mm. B,
but that's an event.
Clearly has a problem with the Klingons.
That's an event.
And there's a bit where she contacts Sarek and asks her. You know, she's pretty freaked out. She wants to know something about the Klingons. I think all of that
freaked out, but
that
there's no sense of rage. There's no sense of revenge. There's no sense of wanting
it's
to
not
get.
About, I don't think it's about revenge. I think it's that she's lost her. She's already lost one family to the Klingons. She's terrified of losing this family, the Shenzhou, her captain.
That doesn't excuse what she does.
Well, I'm not saying it excuses it, but I understand where she's coming from.
She does the wrong thing. If she'd been newer in the role, maybe not as a first officer with 7 years of encountering alien species. I don't get it.
But I think that's the story, though, that she, you know, this is a person that I don't know if we're meant to agree with her actions at that point.
No,
maybe
I think
we're not meant to be kind of with her.
We're supposed to see her journey to come overcome this prejudice she has.
Yeah.
This is what one of the things early in development, they said they were using Star Trek VI as their jumping off point. So a lot of people thought, oh, we're going to have adventures post Star Trek VI. But what it actually meant was, we're going to take that story where people have long established grudges or have lost things to an alien species and they can't get over a prejudice.
Ah, okay, but in Star Trek VI, it's Kirk who has a prejudice. And where does that come from? Star Trek III. Three films back. There's plenty of time to establish Kirk's problem with the Klingons.
But I think
Burnham, we don't have that.
We do, though.
No, we don't.
That's fully established in that episode. How long do you need?
We get it established that her parents have been killed by Klingons.
Yeah.
But that's not, we don't get it established that she has a problem with
What about Bruce Wayne's parents are killed by Well, I guess in Batman, numerous villains. But that's what makes him into Batman.
There's a difference. Bruce Wayne goes through years and years of training and dresses himself up as a bat.
Years and years of training.
To be able to deal with something...
No.
And also, Bruce Wayne isn't an officer on a ship, on a Starfleet vessel. If he was, that would be weird, but kind of cool.
The Vulcans did not train her to deal with what happened. They trained her to repress what happened. So it's no wonder that at a point she explodes in a whole mass of contradictory emotions, going all crazy, because she's had the least healthy way to deal with her childhood trauma, losing her
parents. That's still speculation. We haven't seen that in those episodes.
Well, I think it's absolutely speculation.
You want 7 years of series of her being told to repress her emotions before you'll accept this.
By Vulcans in Vulcan society, as a Vulcan child, albeit a limited one because she's only human. That is how she has been brought up. How much more do you need to know?
But you say that, we've only seen one scene of her being taught anything by Vulcans. And then we have a conversation with Sarah.
But you can't possibly
expect to establish the entire backstory of a character in one episode.
How do you do it in any film which only lasts an hour and a half? That's the length.
And you would have scenes that would better establish that. We had those scenes.
Like a film is, you know, most films are about an hour and a half long. That is the length of these two interviews. You can tell a story in an hour and a half.
That's what they've done. The film sets up that Burnham's parents were killed by Vulcans. It sets up that upsets her. But it doesn't set up the cause to when a Klingon ship appears, mutiny against their captain.
She didn't just suddenly mutiny against her captain because Klingons appeared.
That's what these guys are just talking about.
But she had good reason to believe that she had. But I don't think that she did the right thing. I mean, I'm not saying that
Burnham's actions are. I think Burnham's actions could be more understandable if we saw just a bit more of why she does what she does. I don't think what we see of Burnham explains why she mutinies. I think it just doesn't do that. I think it explains that she has a history with them, but not anything more than that.
I think we've hit a point where maybe we're not going to resolve this.
We're looking at it and we're obviously taking different interpretations. But I think
the Burnham character, there could have been something more. I don't think the immediate reaction to what happened to Burnham is to seek revenge. I don't think the revenge element is explained. I think it's a leap.
I don't feel it's revenge. I think it's fear that she's going to lose another family, and that leads her to react.
That's reaching, man. Come on.
I don't think it's reaching.
I think the show's expecting.
Who in the family?
The captain.
Okay, and who else?
A mentor and a friend.
Yeah. Well, I think the captain. Like her
specifically, the captain. Yes, but I think the whole crew. We can assume that in 7 years she has formed some friendships and so on. I think it would have been encouraged by Giorgio as part of her trying to break down the Vulcan shell that she talked about in the second episode.
Yeah. Gemma has left the group again because Arthur is waking up. He's a little bit poorly at the moment.
Oh dear. Yeah.
We might have woken him with our impassioned debate. Poor little guy. But I don't know. I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree,
I think, at that point.
But I don't agree with what Burnham did.
No, absolutely.
But I like that there were then repercussions from that action, and that she ends up being put in the brig. I was worried when I first saw it that the captain was just gonna, you know, when all the Klingons came up, the captain was just gonna be like, "Ah, all right, Burnham, you stick around." She was like, "No, you know, get to the brig." Okay. Well, should we take a quick?
Yeah.
Should we pause the recording there and?
Permission to leave the bridge, Captain.
Are you kidding?
It's relevant.
Granted.
Discovery Part 2, or just the continuation of the same Discovery episode.
So yes, we've established Burnham mutinied, and none of us think that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Do we think life imprisonment though?
Yeah, that's odd.
I knew you'd say yes.
But no, the thing is, I suppose she's assaulted a superior officer.
Mm.
And she has mutinied.
She's not killed anyone.
I have to admit the idea of life imprisonment is something I wouldn't really associate with Star Trek.
Again, this is something I asked Niall about for his sort of military experience. And he wasn't really, he was a bit vague on the subject, so no help there.
I only know the song by the YMCA about what it's like in the Navy, and I don't think that song mentions anything about committing a crime.
No, they tend to stick to the lighter
you'll
side.
You'll be sent to the brig.
I think Gemma is trying to hail us with her.
Are they not pinning the entire thing on attack on?
I was going to say that. So yeah, if you didn't hear that, Gemma said, "Are they not pinning the whole Klingon attack on it?" And I was thinking that, is it that she's taking the blame for the whole incident, because she did kill that Klingon?
Well, initially I thought they can't blame her for the whole attack. Then I thought, well, actually, what she said was, if we capture T'Kuvma, that's leverage against the Empire. If we kill him, he's a martyr for their war, and she killed him. Against her own advice. So I kind of think, yeah, maybe that is the point where she gets the blame.
Yeah, and to me, that's a bigger misstep than the mutiny, because she knew, you know, logically what she needed to do on that mission.
Yes,
and she acted emotionally.
But it makes more sense because she's just seen her captain get killed.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand that in a way more than the mutiny.
Yeah, but what did we think? I quite liked the effect of that the panel of admirals judging her, that you couldn't see any faces, they were all in the shadow. Yeah. And I kind of, like, to me that suggested her emotional state now was so numb that it didn't even matter. Yeah, there were just like faceless admirals sending her to prison kind of thing. Mm. Which I think there was a little bit of a dramatic license to sort of convey her sense of feeling. I don't know how everyone else felt about that. Well, there may be some.
They had a talent show setting in the courtroom.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe
yeah.
they ran out of budget for the lighting.
Yeah.
Or Queen video setting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think there's some dramatic license going on there, and there's I'd agree with that.
Mm. And how do you like the battle overall? It was a pretty big battle.
I really liked the battle. Mm. I thought it was great. Again, very in keeping with the Kelvin verse action sequences that we've seen, I think.
I rewatched it again today and I was thinking, actually, yes, there's a lot of action, there's a lot of beautiful CGI and it looks amazing, but in terms of the amount of action that's on the bridge and is in dialogue compared to the amount of actual space scene, it's much more in keeping with a Trek episode.
Yeah,
than a movie.
Yeah. And I've heard sort of mixed reactions. I've heard some people saying there's too much action and it was all just sort of mindless action. And then some people saying it was too talky.
Mm.
But I think that
imagine
sort of
those
tells
guys
you
in a room.
Right.
Just go back about 5 minutes and that's what it'd be like.
But I think that kind of tells you that I think actually it's somewhere in between.
I think
that
it tells you people don't know what they want.
Yeah, I think it's the old analogy of the three blind men in a tent with an elephant. Not the one you're thinking of, Will.
Is this an old tale?
One of them's got hold of the trunk, one of them's got hold of a leg, one of them's got hold of the tail, and none of them feel the experience the same thing, but it is the same thing.
Oh yes,
yeah.
I know it now. When you said three blind men in a tent with an elephant,
that was your stag night, I believe.
What a night!
So it was a pretty awesome battle. The whole Klingon blade ship at the end was pretty like, whoa. The one that just cut through the Europa.
That was cool.
I got a bit confused as to where that came from. Because it's not one of the houses that is...
It was one of Tecumseh's own ships that he'd been keeping back in reserve.
Right.
Because, was it established that he has the cloaking technology, but in him alone, the other Klingon ships don't have that yet.
Exactly, because I think there was some query with canon over Klingons having cloaking that early, but I think this is entirely Tecumseh's innovation, and more than likely is lost with him. Because the blade ship was lost. I did like the cloaking effect, had a sort of a green edge dissolve, which actually was really reminiscent of the scimitars cloaking in Nemesis.
Yeah.
If you look at the effect, it's like that's really similar to that. Which found a minor point, just sort of put me in mind of it.
Yeah.
But I thought
that the balance of action and talking was good.
Yeah.
I thought that they held back the action that we got was spectacular and epic, but it wasn't sort of overplayed or didn't go on for too long. There was the story sort of took priority. Mm. I felt a lot
of the talking was pretty epic. I mean, when you give Michelle Yeoh, she was amazing.
Yeah,
I could actually go on for ages about how great Michelle Yeoh is, because she was just incredible. I thought very quickly she was a very good, self-assured, confident, effective captain.
Yeah,
and the way she handled stuff. Someone I can't remember. I listened to a couple of podcasts, and I can't remember which one it was, but someone said something along the lines of, she was the sort of captain you can imagine Captain Picard held up as a personal hero. Like, when he'd been studying historical stuff.
Yeah.
I bet he would have really liked Captain Giorgio.
Yeah, she was listening to classical music in her office for the first time. Yeah.
And she had a bottle of Chateau Picard in there.
Did she?
There's a lot of Easter eggs in Giorgio's ready room.
Easter eggs in there as
even,
well.
Even in the past, he kind of foists that wine on people.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell.
I was gutted.
That's why he did the Nexus. Like, there's this cutscene from Generations in the Nexus.
He's the time travel. Yeah, he's the time travel capabilities to spread his wine throughout history. I mean, I was gutted to lose her.
I kind of thought
it was coming. The whole concept of the series that it was going to be on Discovery and Jason Isaacs will be the captain. You kind of got this feeling that we were going to lose Giorgio.
It was as soon as the credits started in the first episode, and
guest starring.
She was she was credited as a guest star.
If it says like and with or guest starring,
You're like dead.
I kind of thought that pretty early on, because she's a pretty big name. And
I feel that she was fridged. I mean, not in the traditional sense, that she was killed off to serve the purpose of a male storyline. But she was ultimately killed to serve Burnham's ongoing storyline.
I was more surprised that they killed Tecumseh.
I was. I thought he was going to be the standout villain for the series.
It's unusual that they kind of have some kind of flashbacks for a character that gets killed off, because normally you would have flashbacks for a character where you're establishing their backstory and you're invested in them, and they're going to. And Tecumseh was very charismatic. He did seem like the figurehead for that, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And okay, we've seen a bit more of Vok. I'm guessing maybe he'll be the. He might be the.
He looks like
he'll antagonist.
Step up. Yeah, but we've also got to figure in Cole, who was the one who didn't want to listen. He's recurring. I'm sure he's back, and he looks pretty menacing. I think it's actually Ken Mitchell who plays him did say that Cole is of the House of Kor, which is a lovely tie back. Oh, speaking of, that's another one of those little tie-ins. When they talked about the house, the Klingon houses, one of the ones on the hologram said, the House of D'Gor will listen. D'Gor, I think, was possibly the Klingon that Quark accidentally killed in House of Quark, Grulka's husband.
Right.
So that could be of that house.
Oh, that's a cool
I saw something about that on the old on Twitter, and I was like, okay.
So, yeah,
level of knowledge above mine track, but yeah,
I think
I'm a big Grulka fan.
USS Shran.
USS Shran was that I was going to say.
Ah, that's a nice.
Yes,
a nice,
I didn't know if you guys had heard that.
Not the first time around. But
I caught it on Memory Alpha, and I deliberately rewound and listened to check it again today. But I hope actually Yo and Kavma could both come back in some sort of flashback form.
Yeah,
throughout the series, it would be nice to have them again.
T'Kuvna sounds a lot like a northern pronunciation of the governor. T'Kuvna. Watch out for T'Kuvna, he's on his way. He'll have you. Maybe not.
Hey, you went for that joke, man. It's cool. I admire that.
Yeah.
You went with it.
I still think it's really good.
Mm. So we had two episodes, we never saw the damn ship. We never saw Discovery. I was like, but I mean, we discussed this as very much a prologue.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like a little bit of a tease, though.
It does, but that, I think that's interesting in itself that the opening episodes weren't a pilot as such. They sort of serve as a prologue, and it feels like that the story's sort of taking priority over a.
Who wrote those first two episodes? Were they written by the same person, or?
Well, I don't know, because Brian Fuller's credited as the story by Brian Fuller.
I mean, I think it's a definite move. They wanted to have like a prologue bit. They wanted to have how she got to this position where she's, you know, and how she gets to Discovery. And I think they definitely wanted to have a significant mentor figure killed and have that effect on her. So it kind of makes sense.
But
and it builds up excitement for another week as well. It's like, we still got Discovery to see.
Yeah, definitely. I know that originally the idea was that it would be an anthology series.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I get the impression that perhaps that makes sense, because in an anthology series you probably wouldn't have like a traditional pilot, would you? Because you'd only have a certain amount of episodes to tell your story.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if these two episodes were kind of a... they were what they had with that original idea, I think perhaps if Netflix had said, well, actually we want you to make, well, not Netflix, sorry, but CBS had said, this is going to be a new series which we can see going on, maybe they would have done a more traditional pilot in the first two episodes.
Because
I imagine in episode three we're going to see Captain Lorca, Stamets.
Yes,
we're going to see the Discovery.
We're going to see everyone, I think.
Yeah.
So I mean, I have to admit, I think by the next episode, I think that might be the one where I get more on board.
Mm.
Yeah. I kind of like that the opening two episodes were sort of a standalone movie in a way.
Yeah.
I didn't like that episode two was under 40 minutes. Come on.
Yeah. Well, it was, wasn't it? It was like 39.
Yeah.
39.38. Come on, give us a bit more.
Just 5 more minutes.
All those ships fighting, and you guys are looking at your stopwatches. I'm looking forward, because we hopefully will see. I'm very excited about seeing Jason Isaacs because he's fantastic. I'm excited about seeing Lieutenant Stamets and his. I'm going to throw out something that was me and Niall were talking about yesterday. Here's the thing: is Discovery powered by mushrooms?
I feel like some explanation is needed.
In terms of the engine or the crew take them.
Well, possibly, because the whole thing that Stamets is a fungus expert, but there has been something that apparently he's works in engineering. Why got a fungus expert working in engineering? Lorca's line in one of the trailers: a whole new way to fly.
We do, man.
Also, I think
throw mushrooms into the reactor?
The mushroom drive.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Is he like developed some sort of energy producing?
That's
mushroom?
Why Picard has an officer in charge of radishes in the future, because by next gen era they've got radishes powering the ship.
High potassium.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. which is what all warp drives need, right?
Maybe it's I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say no. But I like that idea. Unless it's some kind of like precursor of the kind of gel packs that they have, like some version of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Maybe. I tend to think that the new way to fly is going to be more about Discovery's mission type, and I think that she's going to fly classified missions, and that the registry being 1031 is relevant.
Okay.
Because, I mean, we're discussing, that's a great way to have a load of stories that don't have a big impact on the future. Yeah, with a reasonable explanation. Right.
They're classified. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it. That's good thinking.
It's like a CIA ship.
Yeah. And that's why Lorca's willing to get people out of prison to work on his ship.
Right, yes, right. Because that does... I was going to say, because something we should talk about is where we think it's going to go next. It very much feels like Lorca's going to bust Burnham out of prison. Maybe not bust her out, but unofficially get her out. Because we haven't seen a Klingon in 100 years, and she's the best thing we've got. She may be.
We need someone with an axe to grind.
Yeah, yeah. But she's the closest thing we've got to an expert. Damn it!
Yeah,
get her on my bridge.
What about Lieutenant Smith, who did 10 years studying Klingons?
Yeah, he's never even seen a Klingon.
That guy.
This chick killed a Klingon. Get her on the bridge.
So I mean, I think a lot of people are expecting a Janeway Paris type thing from Caretaker, but I don't know. I think there's probably going to be. I don't know, I might be barking up completely the wrong tree, but this is the beautiful thing, that we're now in a point where we're all going, what's going to happen in the next episode of Star Trek?
Yeah,
and that's something
we've
not had for a long time.
I think that's something Discovery's done well, is that it's been a great tease as to what the rest of this, where's it going to go?
Yeah.
There's a great cliffhanger in the second
episode.
That's exciting. I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, the first episode has definitely made me want to see more.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's one of those things that's going to grow. I think it's going to be like, once we see the full story, I think probably then you'll be able to look back at those first ones and things will make more sense or be in a completely new light as well.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see what the whole Harry Mudd thing's going to be as well.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he's going to be in a few episodes.
Mm. Oh yeah, more than one.
I still have mixed feelings about Harry Mudd.
Well, it's very much how they're going to depict him.
Yeah, that's it.
So we'll see, but they've got a good actor in. So
yeah.
One nitpick we haven't addressed yet is the scene where Sarek is able to do some interstellar telepathy with Burnham while she's in the brig. Because what I didn't like about that scene is I immediately thought it wouldn't it be more effective if Burnham had found her resolve herself without needing a space dad to do some telepathy on her to say, come on kid, butt your ideas up. I wouldn't it have been a better sort of character moment for her if she'd have just found that on her own.
I think the important bit in that scene is when he's telling her that she's capable of doing something, that she's good enough. And she says to him,
"You were never one to bolster my self-esteem.
Perhaps that is where I failed you."
Now, I think that's an important, and I think that's going to play out, and we're going to see more of that as we understand more of how the background and upbringing that she had with him goes on. However, I think that might have been a better scene if in a face-to-face conversation before her court-martial or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I don't care for the space telepathy.
And he has to explain it as well.
It just felt like it exposed it as a kind of a function of the plot.
There was a couple of times where that happens. Really, like in that opening scene on the desert planet, Burnham has quite a long bit where she says, "This planet, did it get hit by a meteor? Or a meteor went by, and now there's going to be a drought for 89 years.
Yeah.
And what we're doing now will allow us to help them, but not go against Principle Order 1.
It was a good
But Michelle Yeoh, but surely Captain Georgiou, I know. I've been here for like half an hour.
I gave you the mission briefing.
We talked about this 2 days ago.
Why are you mentioning this now?
Like, it took us 2 weeks to warp here.
there were certain bits of dialogue which seemed to be for the audience's benefit to explain what was going on. That's forgivable.
Later on, there's a scene where Giorgio talks about her own arrogance and trying to break and thinking she could break the Vulcan shell down. And maybe then she should have said, and your bizarre Vulcan habit for needless exposition of things I know about.
A long time after I've known what's going on.
And also weirdly waiting by the phone so that you can pick it up before the first ring's even finished. Sarak, you nutcase.
Yeah.
Commander Burnham.
Hello, Sarak.
Oh, dear. To be honest, I really enjoyed that desert scene. I thought it established their rapport very nicely, and it brought back that self-assured captaincy thing that Giorgio had.
I like the grasshopper people.
I thought from the trailer,
I thought maybe the grasshopper guy was going to be some kind of cool like grasshopper assassin. It's on the trail of one of them for some reason. It wasn't. It was just.
Nope.
But they were cool. I like that. I like the visuals.
I'm going to throw out a question. What is the difference between? And this isn't a joke.
It's a joke.
What's the difference between them going and restarting that well to avoid a drought that would kill off that race compared to Kirk and Spock freezing a volcano so it doesn't erupt and wipe out the Nibiru in the beginning of Into Darkness?
Well, a volcano is really hot and a well's
in terms
water.
Of violating the Prime Directive.
Oh, okay, so not in terms of temperature. Yeah, I've misread. What you thought was important about that question?
Yes,
Kirk was in a lot of trouble
for what he did.
Unless the meteor comet thing was, what it did was caused by something not unnatural, artificial.
Because I suppose that we did see the kind of grasshopper people waking up. I guess it's not a leap to suggest that they've observed.
They do. They definitely do. All the while, you can see that kind of top-down shot where you see their nest.
Yeah, they definitely saw them. Yeah.
Bernie specifically said
it should not happen to keep this from violating the Prime Directive.
Yeah, well, that's very.
And again,
much
there's
a parallel.
You go into that Next Gen episode where Worf's adopted brother beams up a village full of people whose planet was going to get wiped out.
Homeward. Yeah, that's a great episode.
And everyone's like, you can't do that. You should have left them there to be blown to smithereens. Mm. I'm like, oh, God, you guys are jerks.
Yeah.
You don't come out of the episode with the crew looking for you. But regardless, the understanding there is that they would allow cultures to literally be annihilated if it was the natural course of events.
Yeah.
But here, they say, oh, no, this is cool as long as they don't spot us. So it's kind of... But then there's the episode of the original series with the... With the Native American tribe, we'll ignore the massively racist aspect. But apparently, in that episode, Starfleet's appointed itself deflector of meteors that will impact planets and wipe races out. Because that was the Enterprise's mission there, was to deflect a meteor and save that civilization.
Right.
Even though, to their knowledge, they were pre-warp. And so it's just one of those. It's yet another inconsistent application of the Prime Directive.
It would feed into the eventual podcast I'm sure we'll do on the inconsistencies of the Prime Directive.
Another thing I didn't get is why I didn't quite get why a sandstorm prevented them being able to be beamed up, unless it was some kind of like.
I think it was a much bigger level of storm. Okay. Like, it was atmospheric distortion.
But it was like... In Star Trek, or any sort of atmosphere, if there's a light breeze, it prevents them from being beamed up if the plot demands it, doesn't it? So that seemed quite in keeping with Trek in general, I thought.
Luckily, Sari was able to keep visual scanners for any patterns walked in the sand.
But yeah, I get. Has anyone got any other points? What? We've talked about that, Gemma. While you were off dealing with our son, which, to be fair, was the responsible thing to do because he was distressed.
He was distressed. The transporters were inconsistent.
Yeah, he was. He was really bothered by. by the size of that transporter room. But no, I think we've covered that.
Yeah. Unless anyone's got anything else.
I don't think I made my position clear on how I feel about the Klingons.
Yes, that's a good point.
I don't know. I still.
So your position is in fact unclear.
I have a little bit of a problem with the look of them, partly because I think maybe the actors struggle a bit. The makeup seems really heavy. Like there's a particular scene where Tuk Governor. Hey, I'm bringing that joke back. I know it didn't work last time, but maybe second time round.
No.
Okay.
It's all right,
but he his death scene. He's like, he's, I don't know.
His death scene, particularly, it's like it's forced up. He seems to be struggling.
It's
then.
Really sort of all bunched up, and it's like he can't quite get his words out. I
think the teeth were a hindrance to some of the Klingons.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah.
It sounds way more. Their Klingon sounds a lot more guttural. Mm-hmm. With the,
yeah,
like, they were properly done. They brought in an expert. On Klingon speaking, she did translations with them. The way the actors go on about it, they really went for it in terms of learning their Klingon and stuff. So a lot of effort was put into that.
I mean, I guess I think you're either on board with the look of the new Klingons or you're not. But ultimately, it doesn't make a difference. That is how they look now.
I'm right on board. I've been to the bar.
I think that's a really good point. When I was watching, I was like, "Ooh, they're very different." But they've already made this show. What possible good is my indignation going to do?
That's it. It's like
they're not going to go. Oh, wait a minute. This one guy in Nottingham, he's not cool. He's
on that
sure.
podcast, he said, oh, he wasn't quite sure
stop
about
it.
The look.
Stop production.
Roll it back.
yeah, you make a really good point. I was kind of similar. I just thought it was very different, but I figured I don't really mind. Like, it's new Star Trek, and I don't mind that they've kind of gone this way with the Klingons.
Yeah.
I don't get the feeling that they'll be that thing which squares the circle of how they fit.
I don't mind that.
It
feels like a shame because I like that Enterprise made a real effort to do some episodes and actually had an in canon explanation of the look of the Klingons, and then it feels like Discovery's come along and gone, yeah, fuck that, let's do something else. But that's how that you can, I guess you can either get hung up on that and decide you're not going to watch the show, or you can just get over it. And
I think we'll be used to it 4 or 5 weeks from now. We won't even notice.
Yeah,
we'll be used to it. It'll just be that's what the Klingons look like now. You know, well, this is what happened from the original series to the first movie. And the first movie came along, everyone was like that. But you know, by the third movie, everyone was like, oh, that's Klingons.
So we'll see on the next recording session. I guess is going to.
Well, I've seen another 2 or 3 episodes by then.
Then we'll see. And then my Tuk Governor joke's going to go down an absolute storm because you guys will have been able to have thought about it.
Tuk is northern and Governor is like, oh, Governor. It's a bit cockney.
Well, you're
mashing together. Much
that's
like,
what I'm trying to do, man. I'm trying
much
to
like
bring...
Encounter at Farpoint mashed together two stories. You're mashing together... Northernness and cockneyness.
I'm not saying it's not ambitious.
I think the fact that Coven has been killed off means we'll all be like, what are you on about to the governor for? We're all about Cole now.
No, you won't. You'll be like, I can't wait for Will to try and make that joke.
Ray Winston could be the governor, couldn't he?
No, he's too southern. He wouldn't be. He'd be.
To governor.
You'd need like Sean Bean and
Ray Winston,
to get mixed up in a transporter accident a la Tuvix. And then
to Governor. that would be a great episode.
And that actually plays into later on in this part recording.
Part of him likes jelly deals. Part of him likes pies. All of him likes women.
To Governor.
To Governor, coming in 2019. To Governor. Oh, you sold me on it now.
I can pretty much guarantee that. I mean, because I bet there's a lot of Star Trek podcasts that are doing recording sessions about Discovery. None of the other Star Trek podcasts out there will have ended like this. I 85% guarantee it's the best I can do.
fairly confident that we are literally ending like this. I think our viewing figures just went down. We haven't even released it yet.
yeah, because none of us are going to be willing to listen to this back. Lost three listeners tonight. Four. I don't know if Gemma's fully listened to her. No, Gemma has listened to her podcast because I've forced a few on her. That doesn't sound right, but we're in the car. It's okay.
Quite a lot of the last 5 minutes hasn't really sounded right to me.
No, I think we reached the natural end of this podcast approximately 10 minutes ago.
yes. So in summation, I really liked Discovery.
I also really liked it.
I liked it.
Okay. Gemma. Gemma's more siding. I think in a scale of likingness, I think Rick's at the bottom, then it's Gemma, then it's me, then it's t'other Rick.
T'other Rick. T'other Rick. I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait for episode 3 now, because we're going to meet Captain Lorca, we're going to see a Discovery.
Yeah.
Tyler and Cole. No, we'll see Cole again, sorry.
I think
we're going to meet Cadet Tilly. I'm quite looking forward to meeting Cadet Tilly.
I think that the Lorca-Burnham dynamic could be really good, because I think Lorca might be the character which Burnham goes, oh, wait a minute, this is someone who is like me, but sees something in Lorca that she doesn't want to see in herself. Like Burnham's redemption, I think, will come through her relationship with Lorca, I think.
Yeah,
and I think
and I'm happy to see that.
I think it's going to be
a redemption story, isn't it?
Then we don't know.
They may be going to surprise us.
They might just double down on it and just be just destroy everything.
Yeah,
who knows? We'll look forward to finding out, because it is great. Star Trek is kind of back on TV now, where it should be.
So yeah, it's great to be having these, you know, speculative debates.
Yeah, definitely agree.
Right. I think that brings our episode to its conclusion.
All right, then.
Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Yeah, cheers. Take care of yourselves, and see you next time.
And don't mutiny.
Or maybe do.
No, don't. Even if you think you have the right reasons, don't. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the numbers 10 and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. And you can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal, individual level, my Twitter is @nerdrick, and I believe you two also have Twitters.
I do. Mine is @WillTurland.
Mine is @MrImhotep. MisterImhotep.
So please do get in touch, give us any feedback, or suggest new episode topics, anything like that.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
10 backward?
Daddy, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 backward.
10 backward. Okay, we're now going to talk about Discovery.
Yeah.
Off camera.
Off camera.
I'm only on my second beer.
I really hope your podcasting talking is going to be better than...
Why? Well, you know that it isn't. Right.
Also, I don't want to touch your camera.